Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
See, if you join the Giant Size Team Up Network, I promise to forget your name and brutally murder it every chance I get.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel. This is your weekly download for all things that are comic geek awesome sauce. We cover everything from the books to the TV shows to stuff you've never even heard of, like collectible card games. What? What is that? I am the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall. Along with me, as always, is the stoic bearded man of podcasting, Paul Klotz.
Yo.
And the whiny crybaby about Batman, Chris Wisdom.
Batman was one of the better things.
We're going to beat that horse beyond death. I mean, we revived it in the Lazarus Pit like three times and killed it again. We've beaten that Batman and Superman horse so much.
We're following the Family Guy equation on this. It's not funny.
I will take it. You know, we've had some great episodes here lately, and we just recorded a special one. We did the Doctor Strange Roundtable, where we were joined by Joe Ard of Pokemon Go Podcast and Matt Carol Randall Jeffrey joined us. I'm still thinking of Constantine, man. That's all I'm saying. Focus on Matt Ryan. I literally was about to say Matt Ryan. Let's stop. Like, no, Matt Ryan did not join us. Jeff Randall. See, if you join the Giant Size Team Up Network, I promise to forget your name and brutally murder it every chance I get.
Now, see, if that you would have just said Matt Ryan, how many hits would we have gotten?
Not even correcting it. You guys would have just let it hang.
Yeah, just let it go.
You know? So what did you guys think? Did you have fun doing that episode?
Of course. I always have fun during those.
I hated every minute.
It's so much fun. Joe was a first timer, and I think he held his own pretty well. I think he did well. Here we've been doing a lot more things, a lot more discussion, right? It's been said we're the View of comic podcasts to a point, which is interesting. See, we get into this kind of conversation, right? We become part of that whole personality people who discuss things, and all of a sudden we get the View canceled. Do you notice that?
The View got canceled?
It's getting canceled because we called ourselves the View of Podcasting. All of a sudden, the View is getting canceled. Just saying.
Or it be.
So we have some fun stuff to discuss. What we don't have is anything from you, dear listeners. We want to hear from you. We want to have that mailbag full. We want to have... we'd love to do a whole show every once in a while just dedicated to all the email that's come in. Right now, if we did that show, it'd be silence. So we need your email. BTP@GiantSizeTeamUp.com. That is Breaking the Panel. B as in Breaking, T as in C, P as in Panel. BTP@GiantSizeTeamUp.com. Come on, hit us up. Now, there is some coolness going on our Facebook page. I saw this posted there. Who brought us the Inhuman series?
Who brought us the Inhumans?
Okay. Which one of you dorks brought the link to the table?
Oh, that was me.
All right. Speak up, man. Come on. Make this show great again.
Maybe he's doing his best Black Bolt impression.
Well, somebody talk about this because I want to sit back eagerly listening.
But I believe what?
I hate you guys. I hate both of you so much right now.
Crickets.
All right, fine. Marvel announces Inhuman series on ABC. So after they spent two seasons of doing an Inhuman series that wasn't that great called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they're now getting a spinoff on their own. Chris, are you excited about this?
I'm hesitant to be excited about it. Like, I'm excited that they'll be able to go more in depth into those characters through the advent of a television series. But I'm worried that the budgetary constraints will confine it in such a way that it might not be as engaging as a movie would be.
And has the movie been canceled? I know it's gotten bumped once or twice from scheduling. Yeah. Has it been canceled?
That's what this is.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we going to get Black Bolt?
Well, I don't know. But they by pulling the Inhumans movie from the schedule and changing the schedule, this is where it went. But now, here's the interesting thing. They didn't tell us this. Like, I have heard nothing about this until this very announcement.
Yeah.
And it's, this is quick. We're looking at less than a year before it premieres. It premieres in September of next year. Something else that's really, really interesting is it's going to be the first television show to ever premiere in IMAX commercial theaters. So the first two episodes of the ABC series will be set to arrive in fall of 2017. Title is Marvel's The Inhumans. It'll run worldwide exclusively in IMAX for 2 weeks for the beginning of September 2017. And then it will premiere the series in a weekly format, just like it normally does. It was originally slated, the film was originally slated for November 2018, but it's in, obviously it's been a topic of discussion as to why it got pushed back. So there's some talk, I've seen some talk around this, that not only can we expect this to be a TV show, but there's the possibility that these characters could jump off into MCU stuff. I don't know. It's
taking it. So this is interesting, right? Because technically it's small screen, which we know how the small screen does not get to go up and play on the big screen, right? No. They haven't recast anybody. They just kind of ignored that the characters are there. But technically speaking, this is going to be a big screen launch, right? The first two episodes are on.
It's going to be shown on big screens. It's not technically a big screen launch.
I think.
Is this a Jon Snow thing? Technically, you're part of the family.
No. Okay, so the end of this article here says the series will introduce the Inhuman royal family. According to Marvel senior communications manager Joe Tartarelli, are you ready to see the Inhuman royal family on TV? You better get ready. So it is going to follow the characters that we're accustomed to speaking about when we discuss Inhumans generally. So first of all, that's really reassuring. However, if they treat them like the Inhumans, how they've treated Inhumans on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's not encouraging at all because they're going to destroy it because they've been real bad about that. So yes. I mean, are you guys watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. week to week right now?
I am.
Mostly. I'm not entirely sure I'm 100% caught up, but I'm pretty close to caught up.
I'm at least 2 weeks behind. Now,
Chris, okay, so I'm at least at your spot, if not a little ahead.
Chris, how do you feel like the story's been unraveling this season?
The overall story or the Ghost Rider-centric stuff? Because the overall story has been pretty centered around Ghost Rider, with the exception of who's the new director, what's his angle, and what's S.H.I.E.L.D.'s relationship with the rest of the outside world at this point since they've gone public. It's mostly Ghost Rider-centric, and I've really loved all that stuff they've done. We really haven't gotten to see too much outside of that. So. The Inhumans so far this season, other than Daisy asking Ghost Rider, are you an Inhuman? They're basically an afterthought. And the way it reads is, okay, we spent the last two seasons building up the Kree and the Inhumans. The movie got pushed back, maybe canceled. So now you guys need to pump the brakes. But then in the interim of them filming the season and it coming out and being shown, Marvel Disney's like, you know what? Maybe we can do it on TV.
Wait, well, there's a twist, right? Klotz, all I'm going to say is, have you seen where the director does a bit on TV interview with Gemma in his ear?
I don't know what you're talking about, no.
Okay, I can't talk about that.
Do you know who the director is, Paul? Because, I mean, that's
the new director?
Yeah, the new director. From the comics. I mean, that's not...
I have not seen him do a TV interview, I don't think. Or maybe, I can't remember.
No, you would know.
A press conference is what he was doing.
Okay, yeah.
Well, no. It wasn't a press, it was like it was a talking head show. So he had his opponent,
that's right.
The female senator, whatever she is. I can't remember if she's a senator or congresswoman.
So there's
something there that I think I would disagree with Chris about being back burner. But it is not in your face forefront. The world is still very much concerned about Inhumans, and there's still very much a political thing. Watchdogs are still a part of the storyline. But as far as Marvel and us watching the show, it's very much Ghost Rider. Right. And I've actually enjoyed it.
I'm with Charles on this. I don't think, Chris, that they were pumping the brakes on the Inhumans thing. I think this was probably, since they pulled it from the schedule, the plan the whole time.
Well, I think the circumstances where you only see two Inhumans at this point. Lincoln was basically a, oh yeah, Lincoln died. That sucked. Aside from what Charles is talking about specifically, and even in relationship to the Watchdogs, it's not the Inhumans that are the story. It's the Watchdogs that are the story and how they're reacting in fear to.
Oh yeah.
About Watchdogs and their reaction and what they're doing to the public and public perception than it has anything to do with the Inhumans. And I take Go-Go's in it again. So we do get Go-Go. So there's Yo-Yo. Yo-Yo. So there's another Inhuman.
But you only get her sparingly.
Hold on. This is spicy. Did we just catch Chris in a slip?
Yeah. Wow. No, not we. McFall caught Chris in a slip.
You caught Chris in a classic McPhail. You did.
It's a win, but it turns to ash in your mouth.
How's that taste?
Bad, man. Tastes bad.
All sweet and sour at the same time.
Hold on. Let me call the burn unit because you're going to need to prep two beds here. Oh, man. That was rough. Okay, so to jump back in, what I think happened is they decided they were going to do this TV thing, and they pulled it from the film schedule, which is probably not a terrible idea. But I think they've been trying to set up the two seasons of dealing with the humans was to get people accustomed to them. But now I think that they are moving away from dealing with the Inhumans directly because they have to like let the rest of it kind of do its own thing when it comes out this forthcoming year. So if they delve too much into the whole Inhuman stuff anymore right now, they're going to muck the waters for, you know, what's coming. I'm sure there are different creative teams working on it and everything, so that's a thing as well. So I think it was more of like once they realized that this was definitely a, you know, green light situation, that's when they're like, all right, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., ease off on it because we're gonna take it. We're going to grab the torch out of your hand here pretty soon. I could be totally wrong, and Chris, you could be right. I mean, McFall, you could be right. I think it's probably somewhere.
No. Although in this year, yes, he possibly could be right.
He could be.
I think there's a very strong possibility that the way this was done, I don't know why you push the movie back so far on the schedule and not say anything about possibilities of it going to TV until now when you basically have the plan formalized. I wonder if it doesn't have to do with negative reaction to X-Men Apocalypse and trying to ease the waters for that. So you move Inhumans and Kree to television and some backroom negotiations, whatever. If there's a possibility that Feige or other people are having very preliminary talks with Fox Studios on a way to integrate this, because that's one of the big stories out of Doctor Strange, is how this movie opens the possibility to different realities. Inclusion of those Fox properties.
In last episode, we did report on the fact that there's rumors flying right now that Fox is looking to reboot X-Men.
Yes.
I think what's going to be the most telling possibility of that is the success or not success of Spider-Man Homecoming. Mm-hmm. If that's the home run that I perceive it probably will be, there's no way that Fox doesn't come to the table.
I can see
those
that.
Are bold words, that. But I mean, it's very much, as I've waxed ecstatic on many times now, it's very much getting to the point where it's like, all right, Fox, you're not accomplishing your goals. You're not making the money you want to make. You're not putting out a product you can be proud of. You are botching this at every turn. I mean, I really feel like Days of Future Past was kind of an accidental win for them. And I don't know that it had that much to do with their creative direction as much as it was like people were willing to be like, all right, cool, we're getting the reboot, you know, which the fixing of the storyline. So we're willing to forgive a lot of nonsense. And because it has the weird time, you know, they're dealing with the Sentinels and the time and everything, it let you get away with a lot of sloppy storytelling, which I think is even still in that film, to be honest. I think if you're a Fox executive right now, I can't imagine that you want anything other than to get this thing out of your house, because it's this like giant unwieldy beast that you are ill-equipped to handle. It has so much potential, but you're not. You go and go back to the well, and you come back with an empty bucket every time. You know what I mean? So I really feel like it sell it. You know what I mean? It's time to sell it back, or it's time to do something like Sony's doing. Though I do think that that's a risky proposition as well, because things get a lot muddier if you go that route. I really do think that Sony is looking to cut its film division apart at some point in the near future, next 5 years somewhere. They've been cutting off, you know, various sections of their business over the last few years and selling them off, or, you know, doing mergers and stuff like that. A lot of the more fringe stuff. And if you look at Sony Pictures as a whole, that whole email scandal revealed a lot to us. It revealed that they are struggling, that they're not doing so well, both in internal, like, morale and the way they communicate and all that stuff. So I really think that they were willing to come to the table with Marvel, because this was going to be like Homecoming is going to decide everything for what happens going forward with Sony, at least Sony Pictures, Marvel Holdings. You know what I mean? And if it's successful, which I'm with you, Chris, I think it's got, after seeing Civil War, I think it's got nothing but slam dunk potential. So, well, not nothing. That's not entirely fair. I mean, we have seen things go wrong. But yeah, no, I think it has such slam dunk potential that I don't see how it doesn't just turn into a beautiful thing. And so, yeah, I'd like to see Fox come to the table. I'd like to see them, you know, choke down their pride a little bit, and let's get some real results here. You know, let's put out some X films with a whole new generation of X characters. You know what I mean? We're looking at with Logan, we're looking to transition away from that, right? We've got a new X-23, obviously. I mean, they did say it.
Sorry, it's Lorcan.
Right. So we've got our Wolverine replacement, and they can just pick a whole new team, and people will rally behind that. You know what I mean? Like, people will be like, all right, it's time. Like, pick some new characters. We're good with that. Let's go with it.
But then you have to worry about them mucking up their own continuity if they reboot the rest of the X franchise and Logan continues on in that.
Well, I don't think...
Whatever post-Logan is. So it's not to say that this isn't just a one-shot and even our X-23 goes away after an X reboot.
If they follow... The way I see it is, if they follow the Old Man Logan storyline at least a little bit, we might be looking at, like, that far in the future post-Wolverine going nuts and killing all the mutants kind of thing scenario where, okay, that effectively caps the entire, you know, first-class storyline for you, right?
Right.
He goes on a rampage. He kills everybody else but Patrick Stewart. Okay. You know, X-23 is a new mutant. You introduce her as a child in that storyline, and then in the next film, you cast the adult that's going to play her going forward. You know what I mean? And they might already have that in place, too. We don't know if there's going to be, like, a stinger or something. So, you know, I honestly think that – I think we're going to see the death of Logan in Logan is my honest belief.
I don't disagree with that at all.
I think that
I don't know how they reboot the X franchise and not include Wolverine. That's the single biggest draw to that franchise is Wolverine.
X-23.
I got you, but they're gonna when they reboot it, they're not gonna reboot it into the future. They're gonna reboot it too.
If you are correct, which makes this even more of a possibility, Chris, it makes coming back to the table with Marvel even a bigger property or a bigger possibility.
Absolutely.
Because how do you do it without bringing Wolverine, not just Wolverine, but Hugh Jackman as Wolverine? You bring it to Marvel, who will be the we won't care. Everybody in the geek universe will be like, all hell King Marvel, we know they're going to do some amazing stuff with it, and we're going to love whatever they give us, and they will be able to say, hey, look, we'll throw you an Iron Man in here. He's going to cross over, right? Or pick a character. Star-Lord shows up just for giggles. You know,
Marvel Studios presents Patton Oswalt as Wolverine.
That's not what I meant. I meant take Wolverine out. I would absolutely pay to see Patton Oswalt as Wolverine. Are you kidding? Of course. But that's not what I was talking about. I was talking about taking Wolverine out of the equation altogether. We get X-23. We get some other characters. Possibly we don't. I mean, you as geeks would know about it. I might know about it. But the movie going on is that's a new character. I've never heard of them before. But they'll be tied with somebody we do know, like the Hulk or
Thunder or something. Which works in the comics when you can predicate it upon that backlog and that history. But if you're just going to reboot the X-Men franchise, having nothing to do with what came before, and you're just going to throw X-23, it's going to be jolting for the movie-going audience. Oh, not the comic book people that are falling in love with X-23 already, but they're going to see a female Wolverine and be like, where's Wolverine? I don't get it.
I don't think it'll be I don't think they're going to like throw away what's already happened. I think the obvious choice is a transition away from it. Like,
but then that's not a reboot.
Sure it is.
No, it's not. That's not a reboot. That's a continuation. That's a sequelization.
They're going to reboot Shia LaBeouf as Wolverine.
Just do it.
I mean, shoot yourself in the foot right now.
If we want to get into a semantics argument, you might be right. But the way I see it is if you – it's kind of like the whole – okay, Deep Space Nine comes out of TNG, is part of the same story but wholly separate. Like – they talk a little bit early on, and I think there's a crossover episode later on at 1.2, like just a one-off or maybe a two-off, something like that. But for the most part, even though they share the same world, they are separate stories. And then similarly, when Voyager comes out at the same time, they find a way, you know what I mean, to be in the same continuity but move itself so far away from it story-wise that it can't, you know, conflict with each other. I think you just do the same thing. You're going to quote unquote reboot it by having a new X team with X-23 at the center of it. What, probably not as a leader role, but more of a, you know, we're probably going to be like, she'll be our transition point is the way I see it.
Sure.
We're going to,
if they decide to keep it 100% in house, I see that as how right. It should go.
And there's no reason why you can't start seeing some of the crossovers that you're talking about at that point. You know, somebody prominent out of the Avengers films comes over and starts helping out or something, you know what I mean? Or more importantly, maybe X-23 joins the Avengers team for a little while, and that's how we get to the next step. Maybe they find more mutants while she's on that team, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of potential there. I think you can keep everything that they've done, especially with the Days of Future Past reset / fixing, you know what I mean, and still transition forward. It's just got to be, okay, well, now this is much further forward or something like that. That I could be dead wrong, though, because Logan could be set so far in the future that that's not plausible.
But that's the problem, though, because it's not.
Right.
And that's my biggest issue going into this movie right now. I understand they can't follow the old man Logan storyline because there's a whole lot of characters that they can't utilize for right. that storyline. But it's set in 2020-something, right?
Okay. It's
like the mid-2020s. So, I mean, just from a continuity standpoint, I have a problem with a guy that's born in the 1800s, grows to adulthood, and basically everything from the time he's, let's call him, he gets to his 30s and he stops aging, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
Up until the 90s, he stays and looks the same age, and then all of a sudden from the 90s to 2020, or even into the 2000s, because presumably when he was in the web, well, that was in the 80s, so I'm trying to think what was the last... Well, even Days of Future Past, he didn't look as rough as he does right now. I hope that gets explained satisfactorily, because it's like, how does he all of a sudden age what would be the equivalent of our 40 years in a 20-year span when he has a healing factor? You know what I mean?
It's been explained in the comics as the healing factor starts to degrade.
But to that degree, though, and in a time period when Professor X is still alive, because Old Man Logan is not 20 years from now. Old Man Logan is wide a ways from now, like 100+ yeah. years from now.
I don't see it as big of a hurdle as you seem to. I'm not trying to downplay like your concerns. I just think it's easily explained away. I mean, there's a lot of absurdity in the Fox X-Men stuff. Like, they've screwed up a lot of things, especially Wolverine centric stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have really butchered a lot of his story, except for that whole, you know, sequence in this most recent film, because that was like the only really great part about the whole movie. Sorry, Fox. Right.
We've covered a couple different topics there. So, hey, help us out. Tell everybody about the show. Go to iTunes, download it, subscribe it, and rate it for sure. And you know what? Anando said he rated it. I don't see any rating. I'm not kidding. I have looked at iTunes. I do not see a rating on there from Anando or from anybody for that matter. So go check us out. We would really use your support. Tell everybody to listen and email us, like we said earlier. Now, here's another one talking about reboots. Green Hornet reboot is coming from director Gavin O'Connor. Is that you, Klotz?
Ooh, no.
You liked the funnier version of how was that guy who did that?
No, and that's why I think this is dumb.
I enjoyed it, Seth Rogen. Yep. Right, I did not grow up with the original Green Hornet. Right, oh. I did not grow up. I knew about it.
Right,
I knew Bruce Lee. Right, and all that. No, I didn't know Bruce. I knew he was in it. I never read the comics, so I was a filthy, uneducated moviegoer when the Seth Rogen Green Hornet came out. Thought it was funny for Seth Rogen, because he's not Seth Rogen. Yeah, Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Because I mostly like his stuff, and it's my kind of humor. I didn't feel like it did it justice. I didn't feel like it took itself seriously. What does this do differently or the same?
Nobody saw the Seth Rogen movie.
Except me.
Well, right, yeah. I mean, and you are the filthiest of casuals, so that... yeah, I mean, you probably found it in a literal trash bin, and we're like, oh, this looks...
Okay, I think if I'm being honest, this is still past statute of limitations and all that. I'm pretty sure I pirated it to watch it, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Well, in any case, nobody saw this movie. It was a huge flop. He took a lot of crap for it, you know, because people who did see it were like, this was garbage. I haven't seen it. Like, to be fair, I haven't seen it. So I'm dumping on a movie I haven't seen.
I think it's fun. I think it was a fun
Well, movie. Yeah, and I'm sure it probably is fun. Who was Kato? Was it John Cho?
I can't remember who played it.
You know, I'll look it up while you do that.
I am interested to see it at some point someday, but this was not something that people were coming out of the woodwork for. The Green Hornet is a very, like, he's a very niche character.
Yeah, he always has been.
There was, yeah, the television show came out at a time when a show like that could resonate, but I don't think, like,
that's the thing, though, is what every, for some reason... People equate that Green Hornet series to some serious piece of filmmaking when it was out at the same time as Batman 66.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Was it more serious and less campy than Batman 66? By a bit, but that's not hard to do. So right. This was really a throwback to that period. Was it more over the top funny than the TV show was? Yes, it was more in the vein of Batman 66, but I think it takes far too much flack for not being... When I saw the movie, I thought, this is based on the TV show, not on the comics that came after.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, were the comics serious and a strong piece of work?
They've gotten that way, and this and especially the IDW stuff that came... I think it's IDW. No, Dynamite. Dynamite Comics got it after the movie released, or about the same time the movie released. And those are really good, but I always get drawn in when there's an Alex Ross cover. So you can... Mm-hmm. There can be no story in there, and I'll pay you $3.99 for an Alex Ross cover.
And it goes into the box with all the other beautiful pieces of art.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, the Kato was played by Jay Cho. C-H-O-U?
John Cho.
J-A-Y. C-H-O-U, Chow. Like, oh. John Cho is somebody else, right?
Right, well, he's Sulu on Star Trek. That's who I thought.
Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah. That's what I thought you were talking about. No, this is Jay Chow. He was in Now You See Me 2. He was, of course, in The Green Hornet. He's been in The Interview and The Curse of the Golden Flower was what he's known for. I'm looking at his list. It's not a ton of movies that he's been in.
Doesn't matter. I just kind of said that as a passing thing, because if it was John Cho, I'd be really interested to see it still.
He was good. I thought Jay was good, but no.
So basically my response to this is just like, why would you throw good money after bad? Like, why would you try? I think Hollywood has this impression that just because you have the rights to something that you should do something with it. And it's like,
Battleship.
Scrap this money. Battleship. Jesus.
Who? Rock and Soccer Robots turned into Real Steel.
Yep.
Yeah.
Turned into what?
Real Steel.
Oh, I didn't even hear about that movie.
Yeah, it's a Wolverine joint.
In any case, I feel like this movie is really unnecessary and a terrible idea. And I think it's going to bomb just like the other one did, no matter how good it is. That's the other thing, too, is I don't think there's any momentum behind this property.
I never understood the purpose of the Green Hornet? Was he just a dude in a mask with a gun and a karate sidekick?
Well, that's he's like your pulp, you know, your pulp detective type guy. You know what I mean?
But he's, to be fair though, that generalization, that description that you just made, that you just said Oliver Queen. So, by that same definition, what's the point of Oliver Queen?
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Okay. Fair enough. This harkens back to my argument as to why Constantine got canceled. Constantine couldn't exist in a world where Supernatural already existed and was current and continuous. You know what I mean?
I think it could have if it was on a different network.
I disagree. I just don't think that it was going to be strong enough on its own to pull people away from the other show that is very similar in premise. So that being said, Green Arrow exists as a show, as Arrow, and that is also arguably pretty bad right now. So, you know, I mean, it's not a really good selling point for me. I could be wrong.
No, my point is just if you're going to ask the question, what's the point of him? Is he just a guy in a green mask?
Oh, okay.
So my question is, what is Oliver Queen?
Oh, yeah, no, I apologize. But basically what I was saying, kind of your pulp detective type, like, you know, Batman when he was Detective Comics Batman, you know what I mean? Like, really, the emphasis was on detective. And the Kung, well, that's the other thing, too. You got to realize the Kung Fu sidekick kind of comes out of the whole real ugly part of cinema history where we were like, oh, you're Asian, you must know Kung Fu and be a sidekick.
To be fair, it was Bruce Lee. And that's an assumption everybody should make about Bruce Lee.
Well, yeah. But if you watch the movie about Bruce Lee,
Dragon or the
it's something like that where it's his biopic.
Yeah.
They really bring out how it was very racist. Like, hey, Asians are hot right now. You're trying to be this hot actor. Let's do this show where you do all the work and the white male hero saves the day without doing anything. It was very much a monopoly, most like everything else. It was a monopolization on a fad that was going on.
If I remember correctly, Bruce Lee hated that show too.
Yeah, yes. If I remember that correctly, that's not my yes. I agree with you.
But yeah, I mean, people do stuff that they don't necessarily love to get someplace, so that happens. But yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing, is this is a series that harkens out of an era where the style of storytelling is very different than it is now. And it's got some ugliness in its closet, you know what I mean? So I just don't. I mean, why? Just why? I hate to be so negative. I feel bad, but why?
I'm with honestly, you. I don't understand it. Honestly, because those rights were probably about to revert somewhere.
So
because that's also the world that we live in: is you make movies to protect your hold on rights.
Hence the 80s and 90s Marvel stuff. Yeah. The stuff that almost nobody's seen. Almost nobody.
Well, I haven't seen it. But you know what else I haven't seen yet this month?
Can we get a sound clip of friggin' Gomer? Is it Gomer? Surprise, surprise, surprise.
But this month, I've yet to see the magical Loot Crate box because it has yet to ship. Coming up at the end of this week, almost on top of Thanksgiving, we've got a Quest for Epic Gear coming up, right? This month is magic in the box of Loot Crate. Ready your wands, pre-measure your positions, which is a dumb line, and get ready for November's enchanting theme, magical. We've cast a powerful ancient spell to deliver you this 100% exclusive crate featuring bewitching items from Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and Big Trouble in Little China. Now, you use a word like bewitching. Honestly, and correct me, guys, if I'm wrong, but wouldn't an 100% exclusive collectible from the TV show Bewitched almost be better than Big Trouble in Little China?
No.
Give
me you a little Ferrell novel.
That's just brutal, man. Well, they didn't. They put in Big Trouble in Little China, and it should be cool.
I have a funny feeling you're about to get a booster pack for Magic the Gathering, though. I don't see how that's not an auto-include in one of these boxes.
Right.
Probably Fallen Empires booster. Oh.
That would be so amazing.
That and Charles is left out of the conversation.
That would be the greatest troll of all time. Charles, to give you the really fast version of it, it is the most useless pack on the face of the planet. This had nothing good in it at all. It was just garbage. Everything was commons and uncommons. There were no rares or anything.
Gotcha.
But I like trolls and phalids.
You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe, and that's midnight Eastern, to receive this month's Loot Crate. And then when that time has passed, it's over. Just go to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up and enter code giant-size-team-up to save some money on any new subscription.
Be sure to grab them by the Loot Crate.
Holy crap, that was close to big panic moment. Since we discussed Doctor Strange, and of course everybody's talking about it now, right? It's a couple weeks out, or 2 weekends out, actually, in the full 2 weeks yet, but 2 weekends it's been out, doing well enough in the box office. It's making some money. We talked about how much we enjoyed it. I saw a headline calling it the third greatest Marvel movie. I don't know if I'd rank it that high, so I thought this would be a great discussion moment for us. Where do you guys think in the Marvel films? We don't need to hash out an hour long of this one's number one, this one's number two, but just in general, where do you think this movie would rank for you, Paul?
I think it's fair to put it in the top five for sure. Probably the number three seat for me, yeah. Man, this is tough. Because my initial impression was like, yeah, it was pretty good. It was like an Ant-Man plus, you know. I'm going to repeat some content from the our exclusive episode for Doctor Strange itself. But basically, like, when people have asked me, I've been like, oh, it was a good movie. It's, you know, like, in the vein of Ant-Man, where it's kind of separate from everything else, and it's good and all that stuff. Yeah, I would say it's definitely in the top five. Maybe floats around at three just because of how important it's going to be story-wise going forward. And it's well-crafted, you know what I mean? But broad appeal, I still got to say, you know, Civil War is the hands-down best Marvel movie so far, and the first Avengers film has to get number two slot only because it has to give it up to Civil War because of, you know, how good Civil War is.
Yeah, I would say I'm a offbeat person. Personally, I would rank Guardians and Ant-Man up towards the top for my personal enjoyment. Mm-hmm. But I could definitely follow your logic on broad appeal.
Well, Guardians certainly rounds out my top five.
Yeah.
And I loved the first Iron Man, don't get me wrong, but it was so long ago and it was such a, like...
By the time, it's the greatest thing ever, right? Because it gave us what we wanted for the first time.
But now we've had, like, 20 million movies with Tony, so I'm just kind of like, I mean, it's there's no mistaking the fact that Iron Man is the Wolverine of the Avengers films. I mean, he's been in everything.
True. Yeah.
So
yeah,
but yeah, no, it's definitely up there, man. It hit some of the same beats that Guardians of the Galaxy did, but not quite as slapsticky, you know, like, I don't want to, that's not really fair. Guardians of the Galaxy.
No, that's fair. It wasn't quite as slapsticky as Guardians.
Well, no, but I mean, like, I don't want to say that Guardians was slapsticky because it makes it sound like it was dumb. It wasn't dumb.
No, it was intentionally funny.
It very carefully carved out its own section of the universe. You know what I mean? And it was like, all right, we're very mirthful. We're telling a funny story over here, but there's also some major, like, big deal stuff going on too. So yeah, I mean, definitely.
Chris?
For me, Civil War is my number one. It's in the top five. It's not in the top three. Civil War is number one. That's where the first Avengers should be. But Civil War did what Avengers did and better. Guardians of the Galaxy is number two. And for me, it's Winter Soldier at number three. Ooh. Because these are genre-busting films that show not only can you be a superhero film, but you can do it without being just a superhero film.
You're gonna make me demote something, man.
Sorry, bro.
All right.
Yeah, for me, then it's probably Doctor Strange and First Avengers are in 4 or 5, and probably pretty interchangeable.
Yeah.
Okay. While I agree that Doctor Strange was very strong, and it definitely hit a lot of the same beats, I very much love it. And it makes me eager to see what they're going to do next with magic. And the best part is one of the stingers, which we're not outside of the spoiler zone yet. I'm not going to talk about it. It's not a full 2 weeks. I'm going to leave it. I'm going to choose just to let people see it. We talked about it on the Doctor Strange spoiler show. If you want to hear what we had to say about it, download that, and that'll be fine. But for the most part, one of the best things was because he was fully in his own, you know, in the Stinger, right? Whereas building up to it was interesting. I don't know. I just, for characters who are nobodies becoming heroes, right? Star-Lord was more or less just a thief. Ant-Man was absolutely a thief. And, you know, Doctor Strange was a doctor. Out of those three, if we're going to do the nobody origin stories, or you throw Tony Stark in there. He was just a dude running a company and he became a superhero.
I would have to say
I liked Ant-Man's origin better than those other three.
You just tried to portray Tony Stark and Stephen Strange as like everyman? No, they weren't
born with superpowers.
No, but they were captains of their, you know, fields. Like Tony Stark isn't just some guy running some company. He's the son of, you know, probably the greatest arms dealer, you know, to ever live, and is the running his arms dealing company. Stephen Strange is arguably, like, the way he's portrayed in the film, is arguably the greatest surgeon on the planet. You know, I mean, these were people who were already exceptional before, you know, what happened to them happened to them. You know what I mean? These were people who were high achievers to begin with, where Lang and, you know, Star-Lord, not so much. You know, I agree with you there. Those guys are like, you know, salt of the earth. Like, we're just dudes. Smart, you know. Ingenuitive, all of that, but not necessarily like top of the top, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't mean to take all the wind out of your
head. All right. No, I'm just saying. I still say about my choices.
I'm just saying, as a kid that grew up in the 80s, for you to say anybody is the greatest arms dealer the world has known and not mention Destro in that same breath, I lose respect for you, sir. I lose respect for you.
Oh, well played. You know, we'd love to have your input on our discussions here. facebook.com/breakingthepanel. Go there. We're putting up thoughts all the time. We're putting up comments. We're putting up articles. Share your own thoughts. You tell me that I'm a filthy casual and that Iron Man rules all. I don't care. I'll say sure.
You are a filthy casual. Iron Man's pretty cool, but...
See, you can't even do it. You cannot admit that Iron Man is your Lord
and
Savior. I
can't believe you just backed down, though, man. You just let me derail you, and then you didn't go back to your story or your thoughts.
There's a story. I just identify with Everyman. I thought that I said my piece. I thought that the Star-Lord and or Ant-Man is kind of a – I'm not sure which one I like more for a no-power origin story, but I like those better than Doctor Strange and Iron Man. Okay. I'm just saying. It's Iron Man, Doctor Strange had the smarts. They just didn't.
Charles, this is America. You can be as wrong as you want.
So, but I want to move on. I want to move on to some other cool stuff we've got going on. I just came across this today from the Nerdist. We don't usually pull a whole lot from the Nerdist, but I liked this because it's got a lot of different comic book news. Marvel is launching a new Elektra series in the books. And I'm very excited about that because I'm looking at the artwork and it looks really good, really modern. It looks like a badass Elektra, not a Jennifer Garner Elektra.
How much flesh is showing?
None. Not none. Her hands and her shoulders, and that's it.
That's fair.
Yes, a ninja suit. That's what I'm saying. At least on the cover art, I really appreciate it. They make her look like a freaking ninja. You know, as she should be, a hand ninja.
I mean,
come off dirty, but that's in the books. I'm just saying.
It would be truly progressive if they just portrayed her new costume as like a burqa or something, you know?
Yeah, well, they don't cover the head, but they got the whole mouth like the ninja covered.
Or just a parka. I'm just going to go for articles.
A part parka.
Some waiters.
I love it. So the new ongoing series is being written by comic book newcomer Matt Owens, who began his Marvel Universe experience as one of the writers on Netflix's Luke Cage. And it's going to be illustrated by Alec Morgan. So this is going to be cool. It's not an origin story. She's fully established. They're going to jump right into the middle of what's going on and just take a run with it. And it's going to start in February 2017. And that's just some artwork for Wonder Woman. But this one I found interesting as well. I heard about this actually on another show on our network, I think. I think I heard about this from Booze and Phasers, maybe? Because there's somebody who didn't really cover comics on the network. But Big Trouble in Little China and Escape from New York are getting a singular comic book from Boom Studios.
Mm-hmm. I talked about it on, I don't think it was last episode, maybe the episode before. Yeah, but I was pretty excited about that.
I can't remember you saying it, but...
And that does tie into the Loot Crate read. So.
Yeah, there you go. So I don't understand it. It's Big Trouble in Little China / Escape from New York, number one, because...
Have we ever seen... such an obscure film just get resurrected up out of like nobody.
Which one are you talking about? You're talking about Big Trouble in Little
China?
Yeah,
like
yeah, that's so good though. That's talking about widespread appeal.
Widespread appeal, huh?
Well, you okay, here, let me tell you why I say that. Let me tell you why I say that. In the '80s, things were crazy, right? Things were odd. Kurt Russell was the Hugh Jackman of the day, right? He's in a movie, you go see it.
Sure.
And the ladies loved him. Mm-hmm. And my wife, growing up non-nerd, non-into sci-fi stuff, loved the crap out of this movie. She loved it so much, she brought it up to show the kids before I ever did. Because I thought, with you, it's obscure. I like it because I like obscure things, and it's weird magic, and it's fun. But I watched it as an older kid, maybe preteen, and I've watched it a dozen times since. And it... Everybody I've ever talked to, yeah, mostly nerds, but everybody I've ever talked to who's seen it loves this film. And that's maybe on a movie going level, it's not a widespread thing, but that's why I said it had widespread appeal. What's your stance?
Well, it's just, it's a film that didn't age particularly well and is actually kind of satirical.
Oh, yeah, I would never take it seriously.
Well, that's the thing, though, is like there's a lot of nuance to it. I had to, like, I watched it again recently because I hadn't seen it since I was a kid. And I had to go, like, to Wikipedia and be like, what the hell is this movie? Like, this just seems so beyond bad. Why is everybody talking about this thing again? And then it was explained in that article on Wikipedia that it's kind of, you know, it's a parody / satire where it's pointing out all of the cliches that those adventure stories normally have, and that the real hero is the Asian sidekick who is portrayed as an Asian sidekick tongue-in-cheek, you know, but he's really the heart of the story,
right?
Which is awesome, you know, and it's the American white guy that is the buffoon that, you know, and, you know, he's gonna like just punch his way out of everything, but most of the movie's about how that doesn't get him anywhere.
Right,
it's kind of out there, you know what I mean?
Chris, what do you think? I mean, what is this book gonna be about?
It's going to be about Jack meeting Snake. That's all I care about. That's all I need.
But they're the same guy, basically, in the acting terms.
No, because Jack is way more Star-Lord to Snake's Punisher or Batman.
True.
Completely different characters.
Even though they draw him exactly like Kurt Russell to me. I looked at the artwork. It's weird. They're gonna be long lost brothers.
How else would you draw them? It's gonna be a universe cross, is what it's gonna be. They're okay. From two different universes.
All right. It's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be an interesting ride.
And I think, I mean, you're looking at this year is what, the 30th anniversary of Big Trouble in Little China. And I know as recently as within the last decade, I can't remember if it was during the 20th anniversary or the 25th anniversary, there were talks about doing a reboot of this, and I know The Rock was attached at one point.
Interesting. I want maybe next week we'll remember. I'd love to say, you know, let's tackle this topic, Chris. I know Klaus can hear us, we just can't hear him. Let's maybe tackle this topic next week or soon. What would be a reboot of a fun movie that we loved as kids, say Big Trouble in Little China? Who would we reboot it with? Director and actors, right? You know, let's come up with that for next week. I think that could be fun. And not necessarily that film, just a film. Like, oh, I loved this one as a kid. And what if they redid it? I already got mine in my head, which actually may be a film neither one of you have ever seen. I don't know.
BMX Bandits, isn't it? And I still want Nicole Kidman in it. That's right, Frank Allen. That's grind, to you, baby. That's
grind
to you.
The cube. I want Grind the Cube. But I want to put Rob Van Winkle in it.
For the record, it's Gleaming the Cube, but it's okay. It's okay.
See, you show your nerd. Nerd. All right. If you've got enough of us, come on back next week. We're going to do some more awesome stuff. Find us on iTunes. Again, go rate it, share it, tell everybody to listen. GiantSizeTeamUp.com has a bunch of awesome shows up there. And we're coming up with a better way for you to support everybody currently. Check us out, patreon.com/breakingthepanel. We are revamping that as we speak, but every little bit helps. Email us, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. That's breaking the panel. BTP@GiantSizeTeamUp.com. All right, we'll be back next week. Normally I do a, hey, check back for when somebody says this, but we're just going to kick out, and we'll be back again with some more awesome sauce.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at GiantSizeTeamUp.com.